Chanting with quality is our topic. So, it's a classic. Some of you may have heard about to read to you before, but it's nice to hear it again and again. There's a very wonderful morning walk conversation recorded or transcribed where Prabhupada is describing what quality chanting is. So it's, imagine you're in South Africa with Srila Prabhupada, morning walk, and you want to know how to chant with quality. Devotee number 8 apparently is a big morning walk. When chanting our 16 rounds, we are not sure if these rounds are sincere, Prabhupada. You should be sure. Devotee. How can we be sure? Prabhupada. There are beads. Ramananda. No, he's saying that when we chant our rounds, how can we be sure that when we chant the round, that the round is a perfect, attentive, sincere round? Prabhupada. Therefore, it is in Shastra, you must. There is no question of understanding. Ramananda. The quality of chanting, he's asking. How can we make the quality best? Prabhupada. Quality. You'll understand, first of all, come to the quality. Without having quality, how he'll understand the quality? You follow the instructions of your spiritual master, of the Shastra. That is your duty. Quality. No quality. It is not your position to understand. He understood the question from the very beginning. He's getting the answer. Quality, no quality. It is not your position to understand. When the quality comes, there is no force. You will have a taste for chanting. You'll desire at that time. Quote. Why 16 rounds? Why not 16,000 rounds? That is quality. That is quality. It is not by force. You'll not do it. Therefore, at least 16 rounds. But when you come to the quality, you'll feel yourself. Why 16? Why not 16,000? That is quality, automatically. Just like Haridas Thakur was doing. He was not forced to do so. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he requested, oh, you're old enough. You can reduce. So he refused. Oh, up to the end of my life I shall go on. That is quality. You've got such tendency that you will go on chanting and nothing to do. That is quality. Now you are forced to do. Where is the question of quality? That is, given a chance so that one day you may come to the quality. Now, not that you have come to the quality. Quality is different. Atashakti, asakti, attachment. Just like Rupa Goswami said, how shall I chant with one tongue? And how shall I hear with two ears? Had it been millions of tongues and trillions of ears, then I could enjoy it. That is quality. Quality is not so cheap. Maybe after many births, for the time being, you go on following the rules and regulations. It is being done by force. Where's the quality? So you wanted to understand quality? This is the quality. You'll not be forced, but automatically you'll desire. That is quality. He gave himself a big devil. He's writing books. I'm not being forced by anyone. Everyone can do that. Why does one not do it? Why do I get up at night, 1 o'clock, and do this job? Because I cannot do without it. How one will do artificially. This is quality. Therefore, they like my purport. The quality is shown by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda vihidami. Oh, I do not see Govinda. The whole world is vacant. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda vihidami. That is quality. Just like we have got practical example. One man's beloved has died and he is seeing the whole world is vacant. Is it vacant? So this is quality of love. There's no formula of quality. It is to be understood by himself. Just like after eating something, you feel refreshed. You get strength. That is quality. You don't have to take certificate. If you give me a certificate that I have eaten, you'll understand whether eaten or not. That is quality. When you feel so much ecstasy in chanting Hare Krishna, that is quality, not artificially. Chant, chant, otherwise get out. This is not quality. This is an expectation. This is in expectation. But someday you may come to quality that requires sincerity. But quality is there. Shravanadi shuddha chitte karaye. It will be awakened. Not by force. Just like love between two persons cannot be forced. You must love him. You must love her. Oh, that is not love. There is no love. But automatically you love another. That is quality. And he goes on. So our topic is chanting with quality. Any questions? There is that standard, and that's on the other side. Quite on the other side of unsteadiness and devotion. But referring again to the example of you view a thing that you value differently than something you don't value. One example scripturally that comes to mind is Maharaj Ambarish. And it's described that he had opulences. He was on this earthly planet, Maharaj Ambarish, but he had opulences not only like Maharaj Yudhisthira that rivaled the heavenly realm. His opulence surpassed the heavenly realm. He was, the opulence was there because of his piety. But more than piety, he was a pure devotee of the Lord. So it's described that he considered all this fabulous opulence as no more meaningful than a stone in the street. So supposing we're going out from the meeting hall, we get in our car and you see over there, there's a little pebble. Look at that. There's a pebble. Who's going to react like that when you see a pebble on the street? It's insignificant. So that's how Maharaj Ambarish viewed material opulence. There's a similar description because he's a resident, or his the type of love of Maharaj Ambarish was like the love founded by Kunta, when the four Kumaras, very fantastic description of the opulences of the heavenly realm, which is millions of times greater than the opulences of heaven, which is millions of times greater than opulences found in this realm. So it, the descriptions are there, but the degree of opulence is inconceivable. And the Kumaras noticed, because they were also endowed with indifference. Indifference meaning Brahmagyan. They weren't attracted or repelled by anything of the material world. Which is very interesting to think about. Why were they going anywhere? If we go somewhere because we want something, and they didn't want something. But what was impelling them to go here and there? So the comparison is given that it's just like little children. Ask a little child, why are you going there? There's no reason why they're going there, not going there. But if you stop them from going there, they'll become very upset. You let them go there, and then they'll just keep going there. So the Kumaras were of that quality, indifferent. And they were amazed at noting specifically the indifference of the opulence of the residents of Vaikuntha. So how to be surrounded by opulence and be totally unaffected by opulence? Totally unaffected, like Ambarish, like the residents of Vrindavan. Excuse me, of Vaikuntha. Because there, you have to be attached to something. And they, the residents of Vaikuntha, are attached to Lord Narayan. So, in the midst of all that opulence, it doesn't change their attachment. They're not, the desire to be enjoyers of opulence is not within them. Instead, there's another attachment, the attachment to Narayan. So everything that they're playing, their airplanes, their the streets, their houses, everything is just astoundingly opulent. And no attraction for the opulence because of the attraction for the personality of Godhead. So, a little bit like what we did the earlier sessions, I'm going to spend some time with the topic of Shabda. Because that's what the holy name is. That's what Shabda is, spiritual sound. What's the nature of spiritual sound? By appreciating the nature of spiritual sound, hopefully, it'll help us become more attached to spiritual sound. Spiritual sound is there are a number of ways of describing what spiritual sound is. And sometimes it's just something that in your mind you associate with something. You're something that's like a spiritual experience. That's commonly what people think of as spiritual sound. There's a study. So you go to Harvard Medical School. Study. There's a member of the Harvard Medical School whose name I can't recall, Dr. something, did a 15-year study on wellness of medical treatment at Harvard Medical School. And the purpose of this particular study was in the matter of healing, because that's what medicine is trying to do, is there some asset or healing improvement for people that have some form of faith, religious faith? And 15 years of study, doing it very carefully, because it's got the Harvard Medical School label on it, the conclusion was yes. Same patients, in other words, everything is the same except this one variable. Same doctor, same illness, same treatment, same medicine, same everything. The one that has some religious faith and one that doesn't, those that have religious faith, and some practice connected with that religious faith, like prayer or something, healing is better. So you've got to get sick, then have some religious faith, and you'll get better quicker, in short. But then he did another study, which was, of those types of practices connected with religious faith, are some more effective than others? And he found that those that there, where there's some sacred sound connected to the religious practice, it's better. There's healing that's better. I saw it in the New York Times. This is after that study. In one of the big cancer hospitals in New York City, I forget the name, Barnes Noble, is that one of them, or Sloan Kettering, or whatever, one of those big ones in New York City. They were advertising, if you have cancer, come here, and one of the things that we provide is Buddhist monks who come and play their, Buddhist gongs, and you'll overcome your cancer better. Is there something innately spiritual in a Buddhist gong? There's something, a connotation is connected to that. Just a little, okay, too far, a little bit, a little anecdotal. Christmas, we're just past the Christmas season. One Christmas season, some number of years ago, I was in Boston. And I received an invitation while at the temple from Harvard Divinity School to be the token Hindu who was part of a panel of three that was going to preview a documentary on the interest in spirituality in people in America today. There's a documentary prepared by some graduate students, not at Harvard, but some place. And it wasn't high budget film by any means, but it was interesting. And they interviewed different people and spiritual leaders and people in general. And the theme of it was someone's on a quest for spirituality, and they happened to live in America, so they had different experiences and different, getting on a bus and going somewhere looking for spirituality and different things. So one time the person was in a boat. It was this part I thought was nicely done. He's got a little canoe and he's paddling very slowly, completely silent. Just hear the splashing of the water with the paddle, and he comes to the shore of a lake, pulls the boat up on the shore of the lake, gets out of the boat, and then walks a few feet and he sees a Buddhist monk sitting. And he approaches the Buddhist monk very slowly and respectfully. The Buddhist monk picks up a mallet and hits the mallet on a gong. Boom. So it was a powerful little segment of the film. It certainly got everybody's attention and everyone was alert to what was going on. So therefore that person, that practitioner or the searcher or both, some sound, like at the cancer hospital in New York City, some sound that may be associated with, I guess Buddhism is okay because God's out of the picture. You can be spiritual without having God in the picture. Maybe that makes people comfortable. But Shabda is more than something that's associated with something that you think is spiritual. Shabda, specifically means that the entirety of the spiritual world is manifested within that sound vibration. So it's more than a representation of something that's whatever people think is spiritual. And it's not just like a broadcast from the spiritual world. That's also there. It broadcasts from the spiritual world, but it conveys, that sound vibration conveys the entirety of the spiritual world. And one who receives it can experience the entire spiritual world, even we're here. It's not a symbol of something. It's not just information, like a lot of professions these days related to information technology. So it's information is there, but it's far more than information. Words are symbols of something, like. We have the word chair. So the word chair is a symbol of something. It's a chair. But the word chair and the object are different. The words are just symbols of something. Like from my visits to China, I came to know there's no word for God. There's no word for God because they don't have an idea of God. Because words are symbols of something. They don't even have an idea of something, so they don't have a word for it. Can you imagine? Think in Sanskrit, how many names are there for God? Start with Vishnu Sahasranam, but there's unlimited numbers, besides thousands of names. And in Chinese, shunya. They don't even have a concept. Imagine what that experience is like. And then try to become a devotee. But it works because Shabda conveys the whole spiritual world. So it's not a symbol of something. It's something. Abhinatvam nama namino. The nama, the name, and the object named, there's a relationship of non-difference. Abhinna, tvam, nam, nami. That's Shabda. There's a short description of this in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada, in a purport. Adi Mula chapter 5 speaks of Shabda. And in short, it's that which can it be confined within our material experience? Like, Adhoksaja is one of the names of God that conveys that. What does Adhoksaja mean? That which is beyond the range of our senses. Achintya, inconceivable. So there are religions that say the name of God cannot be spoken. Judaism is one of those. It says the name of God cannot be spoken because it's too powerful. I don't know, if you blow your mouth off or something if you say it. It's too powerful. So it's not within the capacity of something material to utter that which is too powerful to utter. That's a concept of appreciating the potency of God and His name. But when we're chanting God's name, we don't say it's beyond our capacity, materially speaking, to know it and to, materially speaking, to utter it, materially speaking, to experience it. But at the same time, Shabda conveys all of that. It is of that quality. So chanting is of that quality. One reference, just trying to make a point here, different ways to make the same point. One passage from Ramayana that Prabhupada liked to refer to, repeatedly referred to, is when Dasarath was visited by Vishvamitra Muni. And the exchange between the two was, he didn't say, "How's it going?" or "How are you?" But his question was, "How is your effort to achieve perfection?" That was the initial, like how, the devotees might say, "How is your sadhana?" And we might, you know, someone else conventionally might say, "How are you? Are you having a nice day? Nice to see you. How's everything?" And I get that question. "How is everything?" "Everything?" "Well, yeah, how much time do you have?" "How's everything?" That can be a material sound vibration, or it can be a spiritual sound vibration. If Prabhupada was to ask, "How are you?" The sound vibration is a different sound vibration than somebody else asking that question, because the difference is the consciousness behind it. I'm trying to establish a couple of points here. There's three things. There's the broadcaster of sound, there's the sound, and there's the receiver of sound. The Shabda Brahman comes from the spiritual world. The broadcasting place is transcendence. The subject matter from transcendence is transcendence. And that's the holy name. The holy name is none different than Krishna. The source is the spiritual realm that conveys we don't think of Krishna alone, we think of Krishna in association with his abode and his associates and his entourage and his pastimes and everything. Prabhupada's example of that is, "The king is coming, the king is coming." Does that mean he's walking down the road alone? Such a thing? No such a thing. "The king is coming, the king is coming." It's a whole shebang coming down the road. And think of some experiences of that. When, remember some years ago, the president was visiting New York City to attend some function in the UN. My goodness, there were a zillion police cars all over the place. And wherever it was, it was the path it was going to be. They had a whole thing, you know, road things on either side of the street, police everywhere. I mean, if somebody wanted to harm the president, they would certainly know where to go, because he's going to be on that road. But he certainly wasn't alone also. So, when Krishna is present, the fullness of Krishna comes with Krishna. Very early, with the art department, there was a practice. The devotees didn't know how to paint paintings of Krishna. But they were given the assignment to paint paintings of Krishna. So one of the things they did is they went to art stores in India and got posters, or their, you know, JPEGs weren't so common, so they had to get actual prints of paintings of Krishna. And then they would show them to Prabhupada. And the question was, "Prabhupada, is this bona fide?" And he would then certify, "Yes, that's bona fide," or "That's not bona fide." And one of the standards, whether it was bona fide or not bona fide, was if Krishna was alone. Sometimes, I'm sure you've seen some beautiful artwork of little baby Krishna's face off in a cloud somewhere. And Prabhupada would say, "That's not bona fide." But the artwork is so beautiful. But it's not bona fide, because Krishna's never alone. Where are Krishna's cows? Where is the river Jamuna? Where are the peacocks? One of the artists shared this with me. I don't know if any of you know him, or you've certainly seen his art. Muralidhar was such a quality artist, and he still is such a quality artist. He's doing other things. He once wanted to know from Prabhupada the same question, so he gave a whole bunch of artwork and laid them before Prabhupada, said, which one of them looks most like Krishna? He said, they're all bona fide. They're very, all very different. So then they discussed some other things, and he went back and he asked the same question again, which one of them looks most like Krishna? And he said, they're all bona fide. And then he said, here's one, it's supposing just a child that makes a little stick figure. There's Krishna's body, there's Krishna's legs, there's Krishna's arms, and he's holding a flute, and he has a little peacock feather, and is that Krishna? And Prabhupada said, that's Krishna. There's his peacock feather, there's the cows, there's his flute, there are the cowherd boys, there's some gopis. The point I'm making is, that Shabda conveys the entirety of the spiritual world. It's not a symbol of something, represents something, or it's just conveys some information. The fullness of experience with Krishna is there. And there's a difference in the quality when the broadcaster is Krishna conscious, or is their intention, they're in touch with the personality of Godhead, and they're making that sound vibration in relation to the glorification of the personality of Godhead. Like chanting that's heard from a Maivadi, for example, or a Sahajya, for example. That quality is different because the intention or the consciousness behind the vibrator is different. One Prabhupada story that illustrates this. 1974, ISKCON had just opened the Radha Madhava temple in Mayapur. It wasn't big Radha Madhava, it was then the brass Radha Madhava, but a big temple. And big hall. Not the same one that we have now, but it was the one at the time. And right next to that big hall, there's a park. Still, the park is still there. And one day I was chanting japa out in the park. Nice, mild day. And I saw some non-ISKCON kirtaniers. They were sahajas. I didn't know if I heard about them, but I had never met any of them before. They came into the temple. And they went before the deity, and they were singing, and it sounded like nice singing. And after some time, they, you know, about 10 minutes, they were crying, rolling on the ground, and making a lot of noise. And then I watched Prabhupada come to the balcony, because his room was up on the second floor, came to the balcony, looked over the balcony, he couldn't see anything because they were underneath him, underneath the floor. He called for his servant and said, Prabhupada, in a very animated way, wanted them to go down and throw them out. So here comes, you know, six big, you know, 6 foot American fellows, and they grabbed them and threw them out. And I watched as they were leaving, they pulled out the beaties and started smoking. And then Prabhupada immediately called for a 24-hour kirtan to purify the temple. Because that sound vibration, although they were chanting Hare Krishna, it was contaminating sound vibration. And he wanted us to... He was on the balcony. But he still understood the quality just from hearing without seeing the people rolling on the ground and doing their thing. Just hearing their kirtan, he knew their program. I don't know how he did, but he did. Because, so the consciousness was contaminating, the sound vibration wasn't shoved up. There's other examples. But to have shabda be effective, to receive transcendental sound vibration, the broadcaster, the intention of the broadcaster must be, or is, to spread the glories of the personality of Godhead in a standard manner, in our language, in disciplic succession, directly from Krishna or direct representatives of Krishna. So now, when we're in kirtan, or even more immediately for our purposes here, chanting japa, what's important to receive shabda? And the answer is the intention, or sankalpa. What is the purpose of our chanting? There are mayavadis. I gave the example of Sahajas, and there are mayavadis whose intention is to merge. They chant Hare Krishna, and their goal is to become Krishna, to become one with Krishna in the absolute sense. And that's a contaminating sound vibration. So when we're chanting, the sound vibration we've received is from the proper source, in disciplic succession. The sound itself is shabda, it's non-different than Krishna. So from our side, this is the receiving side, it's that our consciousness must be extended to receive the fullness of the spiritual world, or Radha and Krishna, and everything that goes along with Radha and Krishna. The spiritual world, and their activities, and their form, and their qualities, and their pastimes, and everything is there within the holy name. You hear that? Everything's within the holy name. To have that experience requires an eagerness to hear, or extending our consciousness towards the holy name, not just making a sound. Here's a Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur statement I like very much. In fact, it helps my japa, or maybe it will help your japa. This is a tool that you may find useful tomorrow and into the future. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote, chanting is more than merely making a sound with the lips and the tongue. The very same sound can be reproduced by a machine, or the very same sound can be made by a parrot. You can train a bird to make the sound, and that's not chanting. But when the soul calls out to Krishna, or Lord Nityananda, you are most merciful, you deliver the pure holy name. You're the deliverer of the pure holy name to the most fallen. I'm most unfortunate. Kindly, give me the pure holy name. And when the soul calls out like that, and the holy name touches the heart, then when that, having been touched by the pure holy name, the same lips and the same tongue make that sound vibration, that's chanting. That's chanting. There was a period of time that in Mayapur, besides they had an elephant, they had two parrots. And they kept the parrots right on the steps as you go up from that little park area onto the veranda of the Lotus Building. And the devotees would come by and say, Haribo. And the parrot would go, Haribo. And they would stand for, you know, what speak of children. Adults could stand there and say, Haribo. And the parrot would go, Haribo. And then they taught the parrot to say, Hare. 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 And then applying this thing of what Bhaktisiddhanta said, that's not chanting. So sure enough, one time I stayed in Mayapur after everybody left, because when you're in Mayapur during festival time, it's a sea of people. And it's a different experience than being in Mayapur when it's quiet. So I stayed. I purposely stayed just to experience Mayapur when it was quiet. It was one of those seasons. It comes like every 6 years or something like that. Incredible winds, because it's the change of season from that month where it's very mild weather and the heat starts to come. So when the heat started to come, that the winds would just be really intense and sometimes hail. So hail was as big as golf balls. Huge hailstones. Coming down and coming down, and you know, when it's like it was huge, this torrential thing. And the wind were blowing the hailstorms towards where the parrot cage was. And he wasn't chanting Haribo. He was squawk, squawk, squawk. Exactly like Bhaktisiddhanta said. Chanting, rather, should, when there's some difficulty, all the more comes from the soul calling out for Krishna's shelter. But the intent of the caller, of the vibrating part, calling with the wish to have Krishna's shelter, and the eagerness to receive Krishna's association, there's a quality of receptivity that's needed to have quality chanting. Eagerness. Without eagerness, we'll discuss this a little bit later, further. But without eagerness, you can't even engage in devotional service, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Utsahan. Must be enthusiasm. Otherwise, we can't overcome the bondage of our material conditioning. We just stay. That's imagined spirituality or imagined Krishna consciousness. It's not genuine. It's not sustainable. I visited the Southwest USA once, and maybe there are parts of Texas that are like this too, where there's very little foliage, in part because of lack of rain, but there's lots of cactus. There are parts of Texas like that? Must be. So somebody was describing to me, I said, you know, some of these guys are really big, like they're not big as trees. And then they've gone into this whole thing that they know how old a cactus is because